Welcome to The Detail. I am your host, Kathy Antunes, and you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5, LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Well, August 23rd is election day for the Sarasota County School Board. It's primary day for other races, but it is election day for the school board. So regardless of your party affiliation, everyone can vote with me today. We've invited all the school board candidates, and with me today to talk about her candidacy is Nora Sitek. Nora is one of 10 children with an extensive educational background. Nora, thank you so much for joining me today. I have to say, I'm the oldest of five. And, you know, when I went to college, one of the greatest things was that if I was like, man, if I buy cookies, when I come back from my class, they're still here.
That's true. You
know? Like we would go grocery shopping on Friday night. Sometimes my dad, he would let us buy, you know, we'd each be able to get a treat. Mm-hmm. And we would come home and it was almost like, I'm going to eat my Cap'n Crunch now because God knows if it's going to be there in the morning.
I used to label. I used to put my name on everything.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, my siblings didn't care. It was,
well, I have to bow, one of 10 children, but please, you know, tell us about yourself. First, let's start there. Tell us about yourself and your background and why you're running.
Okay. First of all, thank you very much for this opportunity to speak to you. I am Nora Sitek and I'm running for Sarasota County School Board District 5. I'm number 8 of 10, and I'm the first of my family to go to college. I have a master's degree in educational psychology. I come from a strong family that has a sense of responsibility and love of service. My dad was in World War II and was a school custodian, and my mom was a school bus driver. They taught me that serving the community is not only a responsibility, but it's a privilege. And for 30 years, I served a school community. I started my career actually before I went to school as a teacher's assistant in a school for developmentally disabled students. That's where my dad was a custodian. Mm-hmm. And then I became a special education teacher, which is ESE, exceptional student education down here, an assistant principal, a principal, and then the assistant director of special ed. And I've raised 3 children and I'm proud to say that they're very successful. So I've learned a lot from being an educator and a parent, and school board is a perfect fit for me.
Okay. And you were up north. What town?
Correct. In Schenectady, yeah. New York, which is near Albany.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And why was there a particular reason you decided to run? I mean, you had a full career. Most people, when they move to Florida after a full career, they may not necessarily be interested in taking on another full-time job, but you did. What inspired you to run?
Probably my really mediocre golf game, but seriously, I came down here and I started working Turtle Patrol. I did that 3 days a week from May until October. I wanted to give back in some way, and so that allowed me to do that. And I started to watch school board meetings, and I was concerned with how they were being disrespected and people weren't hearing each other. Mm-hmm. And I'm someone who's been grounded in behavior. So behavior serves a purpose. So I was watching to see what are the people's purpose that are doing what they're doing. And so I thought long and hard about it. And after 2 years, and it was last May that I decided that I needed to use my expertise to help the students in Sarasota County, as well as the parents who I've advocated for my whole career, mm-hmm. and teachers. It's who I'm very proud I'm a teacher. I don't think anyone is ever not a teacher once you are. Mm-hmm. So my biggest reason was to help make sure that all students are given a fair opportunity. With my vast experience in special education, ESE, that's a challenge for any district. And I thought that I could contribute significantly in that area.
Yeah, that's such a huge, hugely important component of education and public education is special needs, meeting the needs of special needs students. My sister teaches in Connecticut. She's a special needs teacher. Let's talk about your priorities, and I'm sure you have many, but if you were to choose three priorities that you would like to accomplish, what would those be?
Well, obviously academics is a huge piece, but I'm trying to focus on ones that I think that are overarching and are really important. But I do want to say, obviously, the reading scores, there's many variables. I could talk all day about what I think is important. Mm-hmm. The three that I have focused on my whole career is ensuring that all students and all teachers have the materials that they need in order to be the very best and achieve their goals. Mm-hmm. We talk about being an A-rated district, but not everyone is A-rated. And so I would like equity among programs. It shouldn't be based on how much your parent makes or where you live, mm-hmm. the opportunities you have. So I would like to, what I call, level the playing field. I want to make sure that we are making it fair for all students. So that's the one. The second thing is mental health. Anyone who says they haven't been impacted in the last 2 years and what's happened are trying to tell a different narrative. The reality is everyone from bus drivers, you know, salespeople, the whole gamut. But when you talk about academics and you talk about schools, bus drivers, custodians, cafeteria workers, everyone was impacted. If you're not working, you don't get paid, and the stress of children having to stay out of school and not being protected when a parent comes in after being out in the community. I'm just really concerned that if we don't address mental health, it's going to impact teachers, students. We don't have enough social workers. That puts stress on teachers and students. Mm-hmm. And so I want to make sure that we are giving every resource we can so that students are ready to learn, that they're not struggling with other issues that can impact their learning. And mm-hmm. the last thing is I want to solidify the teacher-parent partnership. I always stressed that the best outcomes were when you had an educational team, which had the teacher, parent, subject area specialist, support staff like psychologist, social worker, and the student when appropriate. Once a student hit middle school, I had them come in and sit when I was a CSE chairperson. I'd have them sit in on their meeting and so that they could be an active participant in their own life. I used to kiddingly say to them, hey, if people are talking about me, I want to be in the room. And students really appreciate mm-hmm. that. And also it takes the burden off the parent to have to then go home and say, okay, this is what we talked about and this is what we decided. Mm-hmm. So I want to beef that up and I want to instill in people the power that we all have when we're working toward a positive goal together.
Yeah.
Those are my three big ones that I am focusing on.
Okay. Well, those sound great. And to reading scores, I did want to get to that. And I've asked, and we'll continue to ask everybody about reading scores because you know, as you know, if children, I think third grade is kind of the point where, you know, I had two boys. One was a really early reader. You know, he was in kindergarten. The teacher's like, why is he here? But he was all boy and running around. She goes, okay, I know why he's here. But he could read, you know, really early. And then my other one was like, no, mommy, I want you to do it. I want you to read to me. So I didn't push him. But by third grade, he learned to read. It was just they had a different launch. But what we're seeing in Sarasota County, so what I'm saying is my understanding is by third grade, most kids have gotten it. Or, you know, that's really, if they're not getting it by third grade, then you really have to provide remedial help. But what we're seeing in Sarasota County is before the pandemic, we had 30% of children reading below grade level, but now we've got 37%. Not mm-hmm. necessarily surprising, given the disruptions of COVID. How would you propose to bridge that gap and bring our reading level with children, you know, higher? So that, because later on, everything depends on being able to read, right? All the higher level education as they move up. Reading is just so critical.
Right. Education is such a mighty tool. It allows us it allows the world to open up for us. So I would say that my very first thing that I would like to look at is that those voluntary pre-K programs, the benefit of early education gives a student such a great springboard in order to thrive. When students come in and they're already behind, they haven't had the luxury of rich literature, they haven't had a parent that's been able to sit and read with them and show them how great it is to get involved into a book and escape. My mother, again, one of 10, my mother taught all of us to read before school started. I still believe that she did it for crowd control. She made sure that, you know, she had 10 bodies. Yes, go read a book, and she wanted to ensure we could. Mm-hmm. But all kidding aside, I remember they were different color records, and I learned AE, she could not say lady, AE, I owe you some sugar. And I remember that. I don't remember a lot of books growing up in our house, but I do remember the importance of education. So I would like to make sure that we have more VPK programs, and Superintendent Asplund is increasing the number that we're offering. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing, is when a student starts school and they're already behind, that puts them at a horrible deficit, and that's not okay. That's not okay. I talked earlier about leveling the playing field, and that should be our focus. We should ensure that we are putting the attention on disadvantaged students, students with disabilities who maybe need to have a heavier lift. And I honestly, I think there needs to be a change in the culture. Mm-hmm. You know, we need to raise expectations, not lower them. Mm-hmm. I spent my career with students with disabilities, and we say, oh, well, they have an IEP. Well, you know, that those kids, you know, can only do so much. Yeah. I don't agree with that. I never did. We have to raise our expectations for this population. For these kids that don't have it, we need to teach them strategies and give them a menu of opportunities, because all children learn differently.
Yeah.
So we need to ensure that we are doing all of that we can to give them that menu, see what works, teach them the type of learners they are. Are they kinesthetic? Mm-hmm. Are they visual? Are they auditory? So that they can learn how they learn, and then access that way so that they can flourish. Mm-hmm. I wish there was a reading silver bullet, but there isn't. Mm-hmm. The governor approved $10 million to go to the 67 counties, knowing, just for reading, knowing it's an issue.
Yeah.
So I just would like us to make sure that we don't focus on the two extremes, the high functioning students, make sure they have great programs, and then the most disadvantaged, they have the best, because then we tend to ignore that middle section of kids. Right.
Well, and every child has their own genius, right?
And like I think that with my experience and that 30,000 foot view I've had from having all the different positions I've had in a district and living the life that I had as a poor kid, I've had people look down on me, not have high expectations, and I've had to fight that much harder. Well, I come from a strong family, and that's great, but all kids don't have that fight, that thirst, that beaten down tends to weigh on you. And I've seen it with my students, and I say to them, the person that you look at in the mirror is the person that's going to drive and be the only person who's going to make sure that you don't succeed. Don't let the outside chatter impact it. So I wish we had a magic bullet, but I will just say, let's get kids as many resources as we can initially, but also look at our middle and high school students and say, if they're not reading and they don't have proficiency, what can we do? What best practices have we used? Even in elementary, if there's a reading program like Wilson Reading that works with little guys, it's going to work with high school kids, but how can we deliver those services without spending a ton of money? And I think one quick answer would be to look at the resources, like myself, retired educators who are willing to go and give back.
Okay. You had mentioned, you know, watching school board meetings and being concerned. You know, as you know, in the state of Florida, we've had recent legislation targeting school policies, but there's a kind of a common theme about parents' rights, that there's an ideology or a movement out there claiming that parents' rights are an issue. I just want to ask you, what do you think about all that? And to whatever extent you believe there are issues with parents' rights, you know, do you, what are they, but also how would you ensure that that parents have that seat at the table?
I've spent my career doing that, whether it was going to their home, whether it was meeting late at night, you know, after hours in a cold building that didn't, the heat was turned off or lowered, you know. Mm-hmm. It's imperative to me as a parent also to have a voice. It's always been there. I think with anything, Kathy, when I hear about something, I don't want to just go on hearsay. When staff would come up to me and say, this parent's upset with you or this teacher's upset with you, I say, until they come to me, it's not an issue. You can't run after every single statement someone says mm-hmm. and say, oh, no, that's it. I think this it's critical that we say, when is this happening? Give me the data. When? What time? Where were you? You know, so that we are using our time on these issues and taking, and when we're doing this, we're taking time away from looking at the real issues that are kids reading scores, kids are entering high school without proficiency. You know, mm-hmm. every time we're having a conversation that isn't laser focused on children and their success, that's problematic to me. So I say to parents, tell me what your issue is. Let's talk about how we can reach the goal of your child being successful. And all the other stuff is extraneous. So we have to take a breath, not react, and respond instead and say to ourselves, behavior serves a purpose. Why are we doing this? Mm-hmm. And that's what I was watching as I watched the school board. And I thought there's a lot of variables here. There are people that are not necessarily stakeholders. They don't have their children in the schools, but they do pay taxes. They have a right, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But I can't help but think that if you've chosen to go to a different doctor, you're not going to then pick it outside the other doctor's office because you didn't like him. You know, I think we need to be really careful. Why are we taking time away from what the school board is supposed to be doing? And we're attacking each other, which is not a good way to have a conversation. Mm-hmm. The best conversations I've ever had with parents have been one-on-one.
Yeah.
You don't talk about, you know, what is praise in public and, you know, chastise in private. And I think that I've had really hard conversations, and I think we need to have those hard conversations mm-hmm. to hear each other's concerns mm-hmm. and then call through and say what's legitimate, what are real issues, and what are perceived issues to distract. Mm-hmm. And that's critical because, again, we're not talking about widgets here. We're talking about children. Right. I'm not running for mayor or city council, nor will I. Yeah. Okay. I've decided to do this for children, to ensure that they have the accurate information, the skill set needed to flourish, whether that's in military, whether that's in, you know, in colleges, any kind of jobs that they could, that they need to have a basic skill set and the life skills like reading, like you said, but more importantly too, is how do you figure out a problem when you have differing views? Mm-hmm. How are you able to have a conversation with someone that you don't, maybe you don't like, and maybe you don't understand, but how do you do it respectfully?
Yeah.
The thing that I keep saying, and I said it to my teachers when I was a principal, and when I was the assistant director of special ed, I said to my staff, the children mm-hmm. are watching.
Oh yeah. You know, you remind me of a story. Cause I asked I asked my sister about her work, and she was telling me about a situation with a student. She's with high school kids, and this young man needed to apologize. And he said, but I don't want to. And she said, apologizing to someone we don't like and when we don't want to, important skill.
Absolutely.
The hard conversations, it's important that we have them. You have been endorsed by the teachers union.
And yes, what an honor. What an honor.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, because you're running for an open seat, you know, you do have an opponent. Why do you think they chose to endorse you?
First of all, like I said, it was an honor. I got choked up, and I don't generally do that. It was a moment for me because they represent positions that my parents held. They would have belonged to that union. And I'm so proud of my parents and their work that they did. I think that as I met with them and just said to them, what do you need in a school board member? And they said, "You're not asking for our endorsement." I said, "No, I probably should." But I said, right. "I'm just really asking you, what do you need? Because I have a K-12 experience. I have K-12 experience. Mm-hmm. I've taught at the elementary and middle school levels. I've worked at the high school level. I've worked at the district level. My lens includes so many different areas. And, you know, I've written curriculum. I've, you know, supervised staff. I've provided safety for students when they were in crisis or when a building was in crisis. I had to oversee lockdown. All of the things that I've done in my career has lent itself to feeling that people hear what I have to say and care passionately about it. So I think that the reason people would select me, whether it's for an endorsement like the union did or vote for me, it would be because it's always about the child and not about my personal agenda. Mm-hmm. If you want my personal agenda, I'll tell you, one of my superintendents once said, in a large group of colleagues, when Nora errs, she errs on the side of children. And mm-hmm. to that, he wasn't necessarily meaning to be complimentary, but it was a compliment to me. That's what I do. I make sure mm-hmm. that children are safe, that they are healthy, that we are giving them every opportunity they can to thrive. And when we misstep, we apologize for it and we move forward. But we really need to shift the focus back to students and student achievement.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, regarding, again, talking about the state level, you've got a shift now with a Department of Education secretary who is a charter school executive. And the governor has put in place a new committee that can bypass school boards. So a charter school, we're not seeing it happen yet, but should this governor get a second term, or I don't know, before then perhaps, charter schools, when they're applying to exist in a school district, will be able to choose not to go to the local school board for approval. But they can choose to go to this new committee, which is supervised by a secretary of education who himself is a charter school chain executive. It is, for many people, deeply concerning to see what many consider a plan to privatize public education. So I wanted to get your take on that. And I'm also particularly interested in your take, given your background in special needs education.
I find it very problematic and troublesome that a group that is not affiliated with our community and our needs and what we provide are going to make decisions based on what charter schools will come into our community. I am in support of public charter schools if they supplement what we offer. It's critical that we realize there has to be oversight and transparency. We need to, I have worked on budgets, on district level budgets. I've had to make cuts. I've had to see what it looks like when we don't have the funding we need because charter schools are taking that away. Mm-hmm. And charter schools have the ability to select who they want to select. So students with disabilities are not readily accepted. And if they are accepted, they're given oftentimes a false sense of security and knowing, oh, we'll provide these services, and then they can't.
Yeah, and I want to just stop you to clarify for the audience, just in case it's not clear. What's been seen, and I attended an education conference in the spring. What charter schools do is that they'll get a certain amount of money per pupil. They don't have to take all kids, right? They get to choose, they get to cherry pick easy students, and they have a profit motive. So what can happen, the special needs kids are more expensive to educate, and the same rules don't apply to them. So the dynamic that can happen is a hollowing out of funding, and it is happening in cities and counties across the United States. So that's what you're you're speaking to right now. Am I capturing that correctly?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that, you know, when you talk about leveling the playing field, that doesn't mean everybody gets the same thing. So when you talk about a public school, we are so great at providing services to students, regardless of where they are. So a student with disabilities, and there's such a wide range within there, but they might need more one-on-one support. They might need supplemental programs, materials. That's not always afforded to them when they go to a charter school. Mm-hmm. Public schools have had a history in providing those things. And I, again, having to create positions, hiring people, creating teams. I had co-teaching up in New York, and that was with a special ed teacher and a gen ed teacher in K through 12 classrooms. That is such a wonderful experience because all students get to benefit from the skill set from this teacher, with special ed teacher and the gen ed teacher. So those opportunities aren't being provided for in the other charter schools. So we need to look at how are we doing the best and providing the best for our students when they're not always given the same opportunities. So mm-hmm. I think we have to be very careful. And that's why I want it at the local level, because again, as I started this, we know what we need. Mm-hmm. We know where the areas are of deficit. So if something supplements, that's fine, but we need to be cognizant of the fact that that means it's coming from our public school budget.
Right. There's an element of taxation without representation. If Tallahassee is deciding you're going to take this charter school, and the school board itself, who we elect, and it's our dollars ultimately that are going to pay for all this, that's pretty mind jaw dropping to me. Right. It's like, wow. So you're going to tell us what we got to do and expect us to pay for it. So,
right. It's the kind of thing, yeah. Why would we go outside of our district when we have issues within our district to fix and our money needs to go in those areas? Mm-hmm. So I don't want a charter school to come in and then that hurts the school that we have in that community already.
Yeah.
You know, we right. have to be aware of it. So what I found in my job is that the farther I moved away from children and teachers, mm-hmm. the less I had my finger on the pulse. So I had to ensure that I was in buildings, that I was in conversations with people. I saw the stresses on everyone. I spoke mm-hmm. to parents on a regular basis. And that's how I'll govern when I'm on the school board. I'm going to be immersed in the community and talking to stakeholders. So I am representing what they need. And that's what I think we're stepping away from when we have anyone outside of our community making decisions that will could very well negatively impact our community.
Okay. Well, Nora Sitek, we just have a minute or two left. Why should people vote for you?
Because of my vast experience, because of my education, my passion, and I have a laser focus on students. I don't need to do this. This is not a stepping stone. This is not something that I'm doing for any other reason, except my being on the dais can enhance Sarasota County Schools. I will still have a good life, whether I'm elected or not, mm-hmm. but Sarasota County Schools won't be able to benefit from me. And I look forward to 4 years of helping everyone achieve more.
All right. And if people want to find out more about you or your campaign, where can they go?
electnora.com. I made it very easy.
Okay. Okay.
And I just want people to look beyond my education and realize instead what I have done. And I'm a known commodity. I believe in people and I want to elevate people.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Nora Sitek, for joining me. Everybody, Election Day for the Sarasota County School Board is August 23rd. You can go to sarasotavotes.com to check on your registration, to request a mail-in ballot, to find out your precinct. Early voting starts August 13th. It's also the last day to request a mail-in ballot. And you can go to Vote Manatee, because Manatee County, you've got elections too, school board elections, August 23rd. Go to votemanatee.com and you will find, you could do the same things on that website. Everybody, you have been listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Stay tuned for the second half of the show. We'll be talking about what's up with dark money and the city commission races.